Harbor. Today we have a very special guest, former Justice Department lawyer Ty Clevenger, who's been described as a legal hitman for what he believes is right. This is a guy who's had judges yanked off their benches for corruption, a miraculous feat considering how rigged the justice system is to protect its own from prosecution and accountability. Clevenger has gone after lawyers, federal judges, and even presidential candidates. He's in our studio today because he's been Ed Batowski's lawyer. Now, you'll remember Ed is the financial advisor and former Fox business analyst we had on last week, who was telling us about how he wound up calling murdered DNC staffer Seth Rich's parents to tell them that Julian Assange wanted them to know that their son Seth had indeed given WikiLeaks the DNC emails. In other words, Seth and not the Russians, okay? And they thought that maybe, and he thought that maybe Seth's parents would want to know as part of investigating Seth's death. Well, all hell broke loose for Batowski after that, after he called Seth Rich's parents. And so he hired himself this Batman equivalent of a lawyer who is here to tell us about the actions he took on Batowski's behalf, what they've resulted in so far, and what they tell him about Seth Rich and Russiagate. Ty, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Hope I can live up to that introduction. I'm flattered.
Well, take the ball and run with it, sure, if you will. How did this all begin for you? And
well, I stumbled into it actually first as a blogger. I've got my youngest brother and a journalist friend both kept telling me, you've got to look at this Seth Rich stuff. So I started filing FOIAs and naturally started getting the runaround. And so in response to that, I started blogging about the resistance that I was getting in response to these FOIAs. And the more I blogged about it, then other people who were following the story reached out to me, and eventually Ed reached out to me. And so Ed told me about...
What FOIAs did you file?
The first FOIAs I filed were with FBI, DOJ, let's see, the Treasury Department, basically the whole gamut of anybody that might have intercepted some kind of information on Seth Rich, but particularly the FBI and the DOJ, also the NSA, to seeing if they had intercepted anything. And across the board, well, I guess there was some variation. The FBI just flat said, nothing here, move along. NSA said, classified, we can neither confirm nor deny. And so from there, I filed a lawsuit to force some of these agencies to cough up information. And as you well know from dealing with FOIA cases, it's been a chess game where they hold back as much as they can and then let a little bit leak out. But every time something leaks out, then you realize there's more there that they're still withholding. And so that's kind of been the history of the FOIA case as well. And with respect to Ed, after I was blogging about all this stuff, Ed reached out to me, asked me to get involved in some of his cases. Of course, he got sued by Aaron Rich. He's been sued by Aaron is Seth's
Aaron
brother.
Rich is Seth's father.
Right, his brother. Actually, Aaron's the brother.
Oh, brother.
Right,
brother,
and
I'm
then
sorry.
Joel and Mary are the parents. He just got blitzed by litigation.
What did Aaron sue him for?
Aaron sued Ed for defamation on the grounds that Ed defamed him when he said Aaron was involved in leaking emails to WikiLeaks.
What happened to that lawsuit?
That is still pending in Washington, D.C. I think the least appreciated aspect of the Seth Rich story, and I'm biased on this, but as soon as Aaron filed his lawsuit, I emailed his lawyers and said, hey, why don't we resolve this quickly? Why doesn't your client authorize Julian Assange and WikiLeaks to tell everything they know? And then we'll have it all out on the table. And his lawyer wrote me the junior lawyer wrote back and forth, well, we can't do that for this reason or that. And I kept pushing, and then the partner on the case had a conniption, sent me a 5-page letter on a Saturday. Eventually, they said, well, we'll issue our own subpoenas for Assange and WikiLeaks. And I said, great. Well, then they came back and said, oh, well, we have to go through this complicated international process, and that's not going to work. And then I pointed out and said, well, The U.S. District Court in D.C. just authorized another plaintiff to serve WikiLeaks by Twitter. Why don't you try that? Then they accused me of practicing law in D.C. without a license and ultimately filed a bar grievance against me. And over a year later, they have not done anything to authorize or get information from WikiLeaks.
What was their initial excuse for not doing it?
The initial excuse was, well, if we execute this waiver, then we'll be giving credence to your story that WikiLeaks has something and we know they don't.
Wow.
Has something what?
Actually has evidence about Aaron and Seth, and we know they don't, so therefore we're not going to give any credence to your theory by authorizing release of information.
But then why would they tell Ed Batowski that Seth and Aaron were the ones who gave Assange the DNC emails?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. This goes to Robert Mueller. I mean, there's absolutely no excuse for this. The key witness in this whole fiasco is Assange and or WikiLeaks, and they make no attempt to interview this guy. I mean, that's absolutely inexcusable. And then it comes out, as you know, Roger Stone files this motion and forces the FBI to come back in and admit, well, we never even examined the DNC servers to find out, you know, who got these emails and how. We just took CrowdStrike's word for it in a redacted report that the CrowdStrike.
Yeah, that smells. It smells completely. I mean, it's and didn't you?
I've subpoenaed CrowdStrike. I've subpoenaed the DNC. They're fighting me. Hopefully, middle of next week, we'll be filing motions to compel them to answer the subpoenas.
And what's their excuse for not giving you the information?
Confidential, proprietary, privacy, on and on. They answered absolutely nothing in that subpoena. Didn't respond.
Have you had any interaction with the WikiLeaks camp itself? Any of the people working there at the high levels?
A little. I have traded emails with some of their lawyers, and they're pretty guarded, as I would expect them to be about this stuff. And they don't want to volunteer anything. But I know enough to say that if there is some kind of waiver of confidentiality, then we can get this information. But this is where Aaron Rich and his lawyers are playing it both ways.
Do they agree that if they were served, did you ask them if you're served by Aaron, if you're served with a subpoena for information, would you give it to them?
I did not get that directly from WikiLeaks. I got that from people who have worked with them before.
Right.
And here's what's critical about this. If I serve a subpoena on WikiLeaks or Assange, that's not a waiver. I'm a third party. It has to come from Aaron. And so Aaron has to serve the subpoena because then he's waiving his own confidentiality rights. And that's why Aaron will not serve the subpoena.
Well, is there an angle in terms of getting, in terms of, since Seth is deceased?
Right.
Deceased people do not have rights, as I know of, legal rights.
Legal rights.
Could not WikiLeaks admit at this point that Seth was a legally admit without sort of disrupting their confidentiality agreement with Seth?
That depends on how the confidentiality agreement was written, and I've not seen it, so obviously I don't know. If there is a confidentiality agreement, I don't know what the contents are of it. But it's not uncommon, of course, to protect witnesses after death if it might implicate living parties. Well, if you have two people who are involved in this leak and
like
one is still Seth living,
and his brother,
correct, then, and you know, then basically, even intelligence agencies under those circumstances wouldn't want to release something in response to a FOIA if revealing a dead source is going to implicate someone else.
Well, what if it didn't? What if there were a firewall? What if you said, you know, we're only interested in, I mean, because you're interested in knowing whether Seth was involved or not because of your client, right? So could you not subpoena WikiLeaks and say, we are simply asking about Seth, who is dead, if he had any, we don't care about any other accomplices.
Try to exclude Aaron.
Yeah, in other words, could you do that?
We could try and probably will within the next couple of months because we've waited over a year for Aaron to do it. I suspect, though, they're still not going to do that, just because if two people are working together on a project, it's hard to extricate one from the other. Now, I think what's going to come up, if this goes to trial in D.C., you can bet that when Aaron gets on the stand, he's going to be asked very aggressively, why won't you authorize the number one witness in the world to confirm or deny this? And
isn't he a Defense Department contractor?
That's my understanding. He works for some kind of agency. I mean, not agency, some kind of company that does work for the DOD.
Now, do you think that's an issue? I mean, what is the issue with the Riches? Do you think that they're in a tight spot because their sons are wrapped up in this massive?
Something seems to have changed because, according to Ed, you know, they were very cooperative early on, wanted to know what happened to their son, and then it just switched. And of course, they ultimately ended up suing him. And, you know, the lawsuit was so off the wall, the lawsuit was thrown out. And so this goes into a different angle.
They sued Ed for what?
They sued Ed. Well, you can't sue on behalf of the dead person for defamation. So what they said was that Ed intentionally inflicted emotional distress on them by defaming Seth as the source of the leaks. And of course, legally, that's just absurd, and that's why the judge threw it out. But according to Ed, that's 100 degrees or 180 degrees different from everything they had told him.
Now, so Ellen Ratner is the first who gets this direct face-to-face communication message,
right,
from Julian Assange. She, we've all seen the video clip where she says this on a panel discussion.
Right.
I'm trying to remember. I know she said she met with Assange. Does she go all the way in that clip to saying, Assange told me to tell the parents of Seth? No, she doesn't go that far.
She just says that it was not the Russians. It was an internal source for the
So league. Ellen Ratner has never been threatened with defamation over that clip or any...
That's a good question. I don't know what has happened to Ellen Ratner other than she's dropped off the face of the
Could
earth.
Could you subpoena her?
And we will, yes, absolutely. She's going to be facing a subpoena at some point. As you guys I'm sure know, in conspiracy land, she tells her version of events cannot be reconciled with the text, the emails, the video.
Conspiracy land, by the way, for our listeners, is Michael Yahoo investigative, I don't know if we should put that in marks, reporter Michael Isikoff, who has this whole podcast called Conspiracy Land, dedicated to debunking the Seth Rich story, the connection of Seth Rich to the DNC emails, which is very, very interesting because it shows you how journalism has become so corrupted in this country. At this level, Mr. Isikoff has put together a podcast dedicated to debunking something. It's not to examining it. It's not to, presenting forensic evidence or strong circumstantial evidence. It's to debunking. And I remember I saw a transcript of him when he was interviewed with NPR. And he said, oh, well, you know, the D.C. police have already said that it was a botched robbery. First of all, this case is still open as far as I know.
I'll say it was botched since they took none of his valuables off his body.
Nobody knows what it was. And he just outright makes this flat statement. And I just thought to myself, my God, how far has this guy fallen? And is he not like...
Well, they all use intimidation tactics. That's sheer domination, what he's doing there. So that people feel, many people feel, well, I'm not going to say that thing.
No, but
that
my,
they're
my
saying
point
is crazy and stupid.
I mean, conspiracy land, it's like he takes a book out of the CIA's, CIA.
Psychological shaming
and
domination. Call it conspiracy land. So right off the bat, you know, we're talking about a crazy conspiracy. I mean, it's like
weaponized debunking, because what they're really signaling is if you touch this, your career is over.
Yeah,
it's shameful.
Yeah. It works
not on us, but it works on most journalists.
It's absolutely striking to me that a man who has had that long a career is doing this. It's just bizarre. Anyway,
We were joking about before we went on air, and although it's not entirely joking, I would not be surprised if John Brennan, didn't put somebody on payroll to get these kind of stories out.
I mean, the CIA has put the CIA and American government has put journalists on their payroll. I mean, that's already a known fact. The names change as people die and the next generation comes along.
But talking about the culture change in journalism, when I started out in the 90s as a journalist, you question the people in power, especially if you go back to Watergate, the Frank Church Committee.
You
question the CIA. We have done a 180. It's like media is in bed with the CIA.
It's like the Ray Bradbury novel where the firemen start the fires. Fahrenheit.
Exactly.
What's the number? Fahrenheit 541.
So, wait, I want to get back to this. The NSA FOIA that you did, they responded by saying what exactly?
NSA use the old phrase, we can neither confirm nor deny that we have anything. With respect to Seth Rich, the only thing that they did give a little bit of information on was I had requested correspondence between the NSA and Congress, and they confirmed that they had 32 pages of documents in terms of correspondence with Congress about, and there was a list of people that I had requested about, and so they lumped it all together, and it's not entirely clear from their response, are they talking about Seth Rich, are they talking about the Awan family, so it could have been more than one. But there's
the Awan family being?
I'm sorry, the Awans who were brought on by DNC chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They ran the IT system in the House. Apparently, they also ran the IT system in the Democratic National Committee, which is why I asked about them as well. I wanted to know, is there a Pakistani intelligence connection here with the Awan brothers? And that's a whole separate ball of wax. But that situation got covered up very quickly with the Awan brothers. But if you've got Seth Rich, who's working IT for DNC, and if you've got the Awan brothers who are running IT, then maybe there's a connection there. There's something to be explored.
Right. So we have a clip of Batowski talking to Bill Binney, former NSA techno genius and whistleblower, talking to Bill Binney about the results of your FOIA, the results that you got from your FOIA in the NSA.
By the way, how many days ago did this come out? This is quite stunning.
Hold up. We just want Jesse to play the clip first.
Yeah, Ty Clevenger, he FOIA'd information from NSA asking for any data that involved both Seth Rich and also Julian Assange. And they responded by saying, we've got 15 files, 32 pages, but they're all classified in accordance with the Executive Order 13526, governing classification, and therefore you can't have them. But that says that NSA has records of communications between Seth Rich and Julian Assange. I mean, that's the only business that NSA is in, copying communication between people and devices.
So any communication I think it happens. Yep. They're collecting. They collected this, and they said it's top secret or secret, and
it's
therefore
classified.
It is classified.
Yep.
So
I don't.
So you're basically saying, though, that it may not be Seth Rich. It could be the Awan brothers or other people connected in some way to this DNC.
Right, but I will tell you that a former CIA employee has told me that they and I believe Benny may too, has spoken with people on the inside who've confirmed that there is something there. So I think that's why Mr. Benny's a little more assertive about saying what he thinks it is.
When you say something there, clarify a little bit further.
Sure, that there is a Seth Rich connection to the data inside of NSA. I don't have firsthand confirmation. I didn't talk to these sources. But one of my investigators, who is a former CIA employee, is telling me that he's checked it out, and his people on the inside are telling him that there are intercepted communications between Seth Rich and Assange that that pertain to the WikiLeaks situation.
You know what's interesting? The same executive order that they are invoking to keep this stuff secret has a section in it that says, it's Executive Order 13526, it has a section in it that says that in no case shall information be classified or continue to be maintained as classified or fail to be declassified in order to, one, conceal violations of law, inefficiency, or administrative error, two, prevent embarrassment to a person, organization, or agency.
There you go.
I think that's very interesting.
Now, I just want to really bear down on that clip we just heard. First of all, when did that come out? I listened to it a few nights ago and my jaw dropped and I just thought this should be headline news. Of course it isn't headline news, but this is a bombshell.
Sure, that's actually been a couple of months, but that actually goes to your point about how this is blackballed. I mean, stuff that you would think would be explosive, it's just, it's not touched, because if you touch it, then you're contaminated.
I mean, there it is.
Right.
It sounds to me like the smoking gun, that clip right there.
Right.
Because let's just go over it again. What in your words, what Bill Binney is trying to tell the American public about what was revealed in your FOIA?
Is that there are some documents. That's what Mr. Binney's saying. There are some documents pertaining to communications between Seth Rich and Assange.
Okay, so that's what Bill Binney is saying in that clip. So we have it, and Bill Binney doesn't mess around. And so it's not like maybe. It's in the net here. We have it. And yet we have a media culture where nobody cares. This is the real problem. It's how much damage they've done to the psychology the psychology of the media culture is what it is.
It's mass delusion.
And everybody's too afraid to pick it up. It's right there.
Well, it's not, I mean, there are more than one smoking gun here. That's a smoking gun. Seth Rich's computer is a smoking gun. Binney's and the
NSA admitting and Bill Binney being like our interpreter for what the NSA means by that.
Yeah, but FOIA. Binney also interpreted the forensic evidence that he saw from the, I think it was the CrowdStrike
document.
Well,
that it was a download and not a hack.
I mean, these are all.
The FOIA results from the NSA are really the clincher. That should have turned the whole Russiagate story right around. Just turned it around.
Well, I think it's just the latest one. I mean, I believe the VIPS analysis is that's forensic evidence and
so is it like they've been downgrading everything VIPS, Binney, for so long that it just fits in with the there's nothing that's
they're not even downgrading it. They're just the media
sidelining it.
The media is the major media. They're coming up with things like conspiracy
but
land.
But they're not debunking Bill Binney.
Speaking of conspiracy land, and I think Ed talked about this some when he was on, but before Isikoff went forward with that story, Ed gave him a bunch of information, including a link to this video where Ratner says that she talked to Julian Assange, that it was from an internal source in DNC. And Isikoff omitted that from his story. And instead, he ran with Ratner just saying that it never happened.
Wow.
And so
she's on record now saying it never happened, saying she never even met with Assange or he never said anything
about
Seth Rich.
She said it never came up. And so.
And forgive me for interrupting. Sure. Are there texts or emails between her and your client, Ed Batowski, that prove otherwise? So she's flat out lying.
We've got texts and emails. And Isikoff had all of that. And any fair-minded journalist, after Ratner denied that it ever happened, any fair-minded journalist would say, well, what about your public statement at this forum?
That's not what Isikoff is up to. But
let me tell you, that's why Isikoff is going to get sued. We're going to sue him for defamation as well. But I mean, that's just boneheaded, clear, black and white fraud to try to portray something, to portray Ed as a liar when you know that the person who's refuting him has previously agreed with what Ed said.
Now walk us through how did your client Ed Batowski become you know, ground zero for this defamation attack of all the people who were involved in this, Ellen Ratner, and then the journalist at Fox, Malia Zimmerman, and the investigator. Just how did he wind up getting his reputation so terribly
targeted? Ed knows a ton of people. I mean, across the spectrum, left, right, journalists, government people. He's very gregarious, outgoing. He just knows a lot of people. And so people bring things to him. That's why Ellen Ratner came to him. And so when she did, he began to share that within his circle of friends. And he connects people. That's another thing Ed does. He connects people together. And so he brought a lot of people together over this information and kind of pushed it forward in the sense that he got it to the people who would be asking the right questions. And for that reason, they seem to view him as ground zero and the person that needs to be discredited and taken out. And I think this litigation, not an ambush, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a scorched earth litigation strategy, basically,
right.
is to intimidate, because they've already shut down the Washington Times. And I pleaded with the Washington Times lawyers, don't cave in on this. You know, force Aaron Rich to authorize WikiLeaks to reveal what it knows. And I know from talking with another defendant in that case that what they did with this other defendant was they agreed to settle dirt cheap with this defendant if he would just agree not to talk about Aaron Rich or Seth Rich in the future. Well, that shows you what their real agenda is. It's not about recovering damages on behalf of their client. It's about shutting this story down.
Right.
And so it's never really been about defamation. It's about shutting people up.
But going back to the genesis of this, the story that appeared was by Malia Zimmerman.
Correct.
At Fox.
Right.
And I know it was up and then it was taken down. And I know a little bit about the backstory we do about why it was taken down. I don't know if I'm allowed to, you know, talk about that, the inside story.
Sure.
Of Fox, that it was the wife of James Murdoch.
That's what's alleged in the lawsuit. That
said, take this down, right? Okay. So Malia Zimmerman quotes Ed in the story that's now vaporized, or perhaps we have a copy of it somewhere. So how does Ed, I'm still going back to, how does Ed get sued for, he's just saying what he knows as a source in a story, correct?
Right. Right.
But still he becomes ground. I get what you said about he's so connected that he had to become the ground zero. But am I right that it doesn't really make sense that he should be so targeted and they should do this massive media campaign against him when he was basically the messenger?
Right, right. Yeah, he's not really been the one out. I mean, he has given a few interviews. Obviously, he's spoken with you guys. But before, before he got sued, he didn't say a whole lot. He just, connected people behind the scenes. And so it's not like he was the one that was out front waving the flag. And
I mean, his family got death threats. And I'm still a little mystified about how that, what their strategy is with that. Why? And there are other people who have.
Well, the problem is that Ed, being a connector of people, is naming people like Ellen Ratner, Fox. She's got her own media empire of like 400 stations or something. Plus, she's on Fox. He's on Fox. So he's connecting people with high profiles, and he himself has a profile, and he's putting out this information.
Yeah, but they're not mad at Ellen Ratner for telling Ed Bukowski.
Well, because Ellen is backpedaling.
Right.
Whereas Ed is not.
So all you have
not.
To do is backpedal, and then you're safe.
Yeah. And
and that seems to be the case in litigation. I mean, I mentioned that with the Washington Times. They cut them loose. They, according to one of the other defendants, they said, as long as you agree to keep quiet, we'll,
talk about Folk and Flick. The PBS, journalist.
Yes, he is in deep water because the judge rejected his motion to dismiss, and that case is going forward. And
let's have his full name.
David Folk and Flick. He is a reporter for NPR, and he went in face first with kind of an indirect attack. Rod Wheeler was the investigator who investigated the Seth Rich story. This is a whole nother just crazy angle to the story, stuff you couldn't make up. Former homicide investigator for D.C. He's hired to investigate the murder. And we mentioned some of this in our lawsuit that, first he was going to go with the story on Fox. He was going to cooperate with Fox, and Malia Zimmerman was going to break the story. a local affiliate in D.C., a Fox affiliate in D.C., wanted to break the story first. And so they went on air with information. And some of the editing of their video clip, I think, was unfair to Rod. And so Rod went to Ed and some lawyers in Dallas and said, I want to sue this affiliate in D.C. for doing this stuff. And
how was it unfair? I mean,
some clips were taken out of context that made it look like Rod was saying things that he didn't really say. So Ed puts Rod in touch with some lawyers in Dallas, and they talk about going after this affiliate in D.C. And according to the lawsuit, a week or so later, Rod tells Ed, well, I've decided to go with some other lawyers, and they've promised me $4 million to go with them. And then a short time later, this giant lawsuit in New York comes out where it's alleged that there's this White House connection between Ed, Ed and the White House, and they're trying to do this to throw off the Russia investigation, and Wheeler's the plaintiff. And so, you know, we have got... Yeah.
That's the Wigdor lawsuit.
That's the Wigdor lawsuit.
Which is full of complete and utter fabricated fiction.
Yeah.
Isn't that legal malpractice to do that?
Well, it's worse than, we believe, I mean, worse than the malpractice, it's malicious prosecution. That's what we sued him for in Texas. We've sued him under several statutes. I mean, we believe it goes to the level of racketeering. Because Wigdor had a bunch of other lawsuits pending against Fox. And even according to his own media statements, he was trying to shake him down for, I believe, $60
million. $60 million is the number we heard.
And we know that he flew over to England to testify to Parliament to try to block Fox's purchase of Sky News. And what did he do? But he cited his lawsuit in New York as proof that the regulators in Britain should not allow Fox to make the purchase. So, I mean, looks to me like that's extortion.
Why hasn't Fox gone after him?
That is a great question. To this day, I do not understand why Fox has been so passive about this stuff.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
And why is Fox so invested in covering up the Seth Rich story when those shows that are pursuing Russiagate being baseless are on Fox?
Right. Right. Yeah. It's
all we know is the person at Fox, the what was allegedly wife of James Murdoch who pulled it. Mr. Butowski told us that she was on the board of the Clinton Foundation.
Right, one of their foundations, yeah, right.
But that doesn't seem to explain. I think there's just something that goes so deep here.
Yeah, and I wish I had a good answer for that, but I don't fully understand. To me, it does not make sense. Their reaction, why they didn't go after Wigdor, I do not understand.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me.
And so give us the timelines on all these pending suits that you have going on. First of all, Ratner has not been served, but she's going to be served.
She'll certainly be served as a witness. I don't know if we'll sue her as a defendant. Maybe. We've got to figure that out. Isikoff at some point will be sued. Yahoo News. We've got cases pending.
Who's Gottlieb?
I'm sorry. Gottlieb is... Michael Gottlieb is an attorney in D.C. who represents Aaron Rich.
Oh, okay.
He's the guy that was kind enough to file the bar grievance on me for asking too many questions that he didn't like.
Oh, wow.
So we have a lawsuit against Gottlieb pending in Texas that also includes a lot of other defendants. CNN, Anderson Cooper are defendants. New York Times is a defendant. Vox is a defendant. For some of the outrageous things that they were saying about Ed, we're planning to...
Like what? Give us a sample of that.
Well, for example, with Vox, they had a reporter, Jane Costin, who was accusing Ed of making false statements about Seth and doing it for, you know, malicious reasons. And I mean, worst case scenario, from a legal perspective, worst case scenario, let's say that we're all wrong and that Seth had nothing to do with these leaks. Well, that doesn't mean that Ed was intentionally, much less maliciously, spreading false information.
Right.
It got very personal, very vindictive, almost like we've got to hunt this guy down and smear him.
Now, they said the Wigdor hallucination fabrication lawsuit that this was all because Ed was President Trump's fixer. And Trump asked him, you know, take care of this Russia problem for me.
Nuts. That's just crazy.
You obviously have a way to prove that there's never been communication between Ed Butowski and President Trump.
Right. He took Rod Wheeler to the White House to meet Sean Spicer, whom Ed already knew. Ed did not support Donald Trump in the primaries. He supported Carly Fiorina, then he supported Marco Rubio. Never met Donald Trump, never communicated with Donald Trump. He just, because of his other connections, like I mentioned, he knows a lot of people. He knew Sean Spicer, and he took Rod Wheeler there. But you know, talking about conspiracies, they wove that into a giant conspiracy, you know, and then yet they're the ones that accuse us of being so conspiratorial.
So let's look at the other side of this thing, which is what some of the things that you have mentioned in your lawsuits and some of the things that you may know about Comey and
St. James the Sanctimonious is what I call it.
Well, and also his chief of staff, James Rubicki.
Right.
Could you talk about, and you know, the FBI in general, some of the things that have struck you about what they've said or done that sort of dovetail with this whole scenario of trying to shut everybody down who's trying to make these connections between Rich and the DNC emails?
Well, you mentioned Rybicki. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I almost as an incidental, in one of my FOIA requests, covered FBI and the Office of Special Counsel. And you may remember that the FBI forced the Office of Special Counsel to execute a non-disclosure agreement, which is absolutely unheard of, that one government agency says, we're not going to cooperate with your investigation unless you execute a non-disclosure agreement.
On what?
On records pertaining to its investigation of James Comey. So OSC, as you may know, OSC investigates FOIA violations, although they've never done it in their entire history. They've never had a...
That's bizarre.
But they also prosecute Hatch Act violations. And so after James Comey went on air in the heat of the election and made his comments about Hillary Clinton, a lot of people filed Hatch Act complaints, and OSC was investigating.
What's a Hatch Act complaint?
Hatch Act is where a government employee on the government's dime gets involved in politics. And there are a lot of people, interestingly, right and left, Republican and Democrat, who accused Comey of doing just that. And it was credible enough that OSC opened an investigation. But the FBI came back and said, in order for us to cooperate, you have to agree to execute a non-disclosure agreement. Well, Senator Charles Grassley, who at the time was chairing the Senate Judiciary Committee, found out about this and just went ballistic, as you would expect. And who's even heard of such a thing? And so they got a copy, and I actually got one too through FOIA, that shows that that OSC, Office Special Counsel, was going to be obligated to withhold this information from FOIA requests.
And from Congress, too.
And from Congress.
Yeah.
Which is where, you know, that's where Grassley understandably just went nuts over this.
Yeah.
Who heard of such a thing? One government agency can agree with another, we're going to thumb our nose at Congress, we're going to hide this from the public, and nobody can get it.
Right.
But that's what they did. And so that came out. But anyway, back to Rybicki. As part of one of my FOIA requests, they released excerpts of one of the transcripts where OSC's investigators interviewed Rybicki about Comey. And it was highly redacted, heavily redacted. Entire pages were omitted. But there was one little blurb in there they left out that suggested coordination between the White House and...
This is Obama's White House.
Correct. Obama's White House and the FBI's email investigation of Hillary Clinton, which... That's kind of a big deal. So
yeah.
they let that slip through the cracks. Well, I posted these documents on the internet, and some resourceful citizen out there noticed that they had also at the back of the transcript listed, because in a deposition transcript, they usually at the back have a glossary of every word and everywhere it appears in the transcript. She pieced that together and put together additional information where Rybicki was implicating other people by name for their involvement in this email scandal. And there was no legitimate reason whatsoever for FBI to withhold that information. It was a bogus reason to withhold the information. She was able to figure it out. But we're actually going into court with that and saying, look, this proves that the FBI withholds information in bad faith.
Right.
This is why the court has to order them to turn the stuff over.
I just have a question about the media. The journalist whose name escapes me now at NPR, what was it again?
David Folkenflik.
David Folkenflik. When he reports something like that, and he, I don't know if he was a staffer at NPR, is he being sued as a person and NPR? At, like, who takes
right.
the...
Both.
Both, okay.
We're suing both him and NPR itself.
Wow.
And we'll be doing the same with Isikoff. We'll sue Isikoff personally, as well as Yahoo News, which, of course, is a subsidiary of Verizon.
And why Anderson Cooper?
So Anderson Cooper, right after the Aaron Rich lawsuit was filed, hosted Gottlieb, the lawyer I mentioned earlier, Michael Gottlieb, who represents Aaron Rich. And they had this long segment and pretty well dumped all over Ed Butowski and made him sound like, you know, that he was this nefarious figure who was involved in smearing this poor innocent man. And so we're not just suing Gottlieb for that. We're suing Cooper for comments that he personally made, as well as comments some other CNN personnel made about Ed, Oliver Darcy being one of them.
Do all these figures who you're suing have to prove, in order to get off the hook here, have to prove that indeed, that they have to find the communications between Donald Trump and Ed Butowski that don't exist, right? Is that their... That's the only way they would get out of this. Because
right. In terms of Wigdor, yeah, they would have to show that there were actually some kind of communication. They have to come up with some kind of evidence that this happened. And they, there were
so
some,
Donald Trump could put an end to all this if
that,
he were
that,
to give an affidavit.
True. I doubt seriously Wigdor will get that far. I think Wigdor knows he's sunk. Because Ed's other lawyers who were representing him in that case originally sent Wigdor a ton of information, text messages, emails, showing him before he filed the lawsuit, this stuff did not happen.
Right.
And Wigdor went right ahead and did it anyway.
So what about Comey?
Oh, where do we start?
Talk about the IG report.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then go back.
Sure, sure. The IG's report, you know, I couldn't help but laugh yesterday. The IG report comes out, accuses him of, you know, improperly releasing sensitive materials, on and on. And the first thing Comey does on Twitter is claims he's exonerated and everybody needs to apologize to him. Well, you know, sorry, St. James, but you didn't read the report very carefully. There've been complaints, and I understand the complaints that he's not being prosecuted for this stuff with the memos. My strong suspicion is that John Durham, who is the U.S. attorney who's been assigned to look into this stuff, has much bigger fish to fry with respect to Comey. We know there was a working group set up by John Brennan and the CIA for all of this Russia collusion stuff. Oh, yes. And we know that there were FBI personnel, you know, working with this working group. So my very strong suspicion is what the IJ came out with was significant, and you know, I'm not disputing that at all. But compared to the other stuff they have, I think it's small potatoes.
Is Andrew McCabe going to be the first chess piece to fall on
if
that?
If there
one?
Is any justice left in this country, he will be indicted. I mean, there is.
What should he be indicted for?
Well, the first thing are his lies that he said to the FBI, because. And it has nothing to do with left, right, Republican, Democrat. He was being investigated for leaks to the media, and other FBI personnel have been prosecuted for this. The FBI started an internal investigation of it. They interviewed McCabe, and he lied to them, because this is how nefarious this was. McCabe was the source of the leaks. McCabe was leaking the information.
What information was he leaking?
About the investigations, the Russia collusion stuff.
Right.
So McCabe is leaking this stuff to the media. Then he's chewing out his subordinates in New York and D.C. and blaming them for it, and for not getting it under control and not stopping this. He's the one who's doing it. And then as part of that investigation, when the FBI agents ask him what he knew, he just lied to them.
That is spectacularly evil.
Yeah. I mean, that's not just a crime. That's just downright evil. And so this guy needs to be prosecuted.
So now, do you have any lawsuit or suable thing against the FBI for not even looking at Seth Rich's computers, because that's connected to whether or not Seth Rich was involved and whether or not Ed was truthful.
Well, you can't sue the government in its own courts, but you can sue government personnel. And so, excuse me, what we're looking at right now is a lawsuit against Comey, McCabe, Brennan. We're even looking at Hillary Clinton, Obama, and turning it into a racketeering lawsuit. Because in order to bring a RICO claim, you have to show damage to a business. Well, Ed's had a lot of damage to his business.
You have to show cooperation among these various parties.
Right.
And which that's starting to come out pretty.
Yes, people are basically putting that in our lap. That's starting to come together. So I think there will be a point where either later this year or early next, we'll start naming some of these FBI personnel. Strzok, Page, all of them.
Wow.
I have to ask the question, are you not nervous going up against these formidable powers? Have you had any threats? How are you doing with all this?
Nobody's made any threats to me. You know, when I lived in Texas, I was also commissioned as a reserve deputy sheriff, so I carried a gun in my pocket everywhere I went. New York's not so friendly to that, but I don't worry about it. The people who are in danger in these situations are the ones who have inside information. And I don't have inside information. I'm some guy on the outside throwing rocks and asking questions. And it's the Epsteins, you know, the guy that knows stuff that nobody else knows or hardly anyone knows. Or somebody like that.
Yeah, so. But you're gathering the information and painting a picture, and the painting of the picture is a dangerous thing, is it not?
Well, I don't think it's too dangerous at this stage in our history as a country. That may well change. I mean, if things go on this track, we could end up someplace like Russia. You know, if we don't wake up.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you expect them to try to settle most of these people?
I think a lot of them will. I don't know if Ed's going to let them settle.
Interesting.
I know Ed wants to see him squirm. He wants to take their depositions for posterity's sake. You know, put some of this stuff on YouTube and force Hillary Clinton to answer some hard questions. And Obama himself, he's gotten a skate on this. You know, the evidence more and more in that Rybicki transcript that I mentioned earlier that talked about a White House connection, more and more of this stuff is starting to point back to Obama himself. And if this is true, and he was involved in what Brennan was doing and the working group and creating this whole Russia collusion hoax, you know, that makes Nixon look like an amateur.
Yeah.
In comparison.
Yeah. Talk about Roger Stone and what happened his prosecution.
Roger Stone did the public a huge favor. He's actually helped our case significantly, too, because the Mueller report purports to conclusively settle the question of whether Seth Rich was involved in leaking information from the DNC. And it says in a conclusive voice that, no, it was the Russians. Well, Roger Stone, through a motion, forced the FBI to admit that the FBI had never examined the computer servers. It had done no physical investigation whatsoever of this purported hacking/leak. All they did was they relied on a redacted report from CrowdStrike, which was the private company with strong DNC connections that was hired by DNC to investigate this. And I can tell you, I'm not aware of another case in the history of the Justice Department or the FBI where a computer crime was investigated and the FBI did not itself look at the computer, look at the data, look at the metadata. To my knowledge, this is the first and only time this has ever happened. And for Mueller to put it in his report as if this was thoroughly investigated and conclusively decided, it's fraud. And the other aspect of this, when we talked about it a little bit earlier, Mueller never talked to Assange. He never sent anybody to interview Assange in the embassy. I mean, he is witness number one in any legitimate investigation. Never even tried to talk to the
guy. Now, can you compel Cy Hirsch to... Yeah, we have him on
audio,
tape, of course,
right,
on audio, saying that his source in the FBI admitted they had Seth Rich's laptop.
Right.
Correct. And that it showed communication between Seth Rich and Julian Assange. I'm sorry, WikiLeaks, not Julian Assange.
Right.
It was another person at WikiLeaks. Am I right so far about
right.
that? So that's so now I know we know Christina interviewed Cy Hirsch and he backpedaled, but not with any real specificity.
Right.
So where does he fall in this hole? Like, what's
at what some at be? Some point he's going to be deposed. You know, and he's going to have to give up what he knows and come clean about it. You know, I was disappointed in him because, you know, I always thought of him somebody that was completely fearless, and now he sure doesn't look that way. I mean, he's telling a very different story from what he told Ed in that audio, and there's nothing in that audio to suggest that, you know, he was trying to feel Ed out just to find out what Ed knew.
Right.
Nothing in there suggests that. It sounds like he's saying, you know, very authoritatively, this is what I've found and this is what I know.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm very interested in the fact, too, that they're blaming GRU, the Russian intelligence people, for this Russiagate business. And GRU came back and said, well, go ahead and sue us because then we want discovery.
That was, I think Concord Management was the defendant. You know, God bless them for saying, okay, you're going to accuse us of this? Go ahead and prove it. Clearly, Mueller never expected them to fight back. You know, he thought they were just going to stay overseas outside the reach of the U.S. government. It would make it look like Mueller was aggressively prosecuting this Russia collusion. And lo and behold, this, you know, these Russians don't come back and say, no, we didn't, and we're going to make you prove your case. And he was immediately caught flat-footed and started trying to buy more time. Fortunately, the judge has not given him more time. And they don't have a case. It's just bald speculation, which if it were a civil case, you can get away with that to some extent. You can sue on information and belief, like, we suspect because of A and B that C is true, therefore we're suing you. But on a criminal case, you've got to meet a much higher
penalty. Well, doesn't that raise the question of why don't they sue Mueller for orchestrating this entire defamation, symphony?
Well, I wish they could. I think Mueller will probably be protected by prosecutorial immunity because, for better or worse, a prosecutor has extraordinary immunity for anything they do in terms of prosecuting someone. However, there are exceptions, one of which is if he was acting in an investigative capacity and he withheld exculpatory evidence or something like that, then you can kind of, if not get the prosecutor, you can get his investigators.
Right.
The advantage that Ed has is Ed was never prosecuted by Mueller. So if Mueller is going out there and conspiring with others to put out this false narrative that ultimately affects Ed's business, then Mueller can be hooked for that. He was not acting in a prosecutorial role.
Right.
So
is that what you're thinking of doing?
We're looking at hooking him, Andrew Weissman, some of the people on that team, as part of a larger conspiracy that, you know, this wasn't about prosecuting defendant A or defendant B. This was about creating a giant false narrative.
I feel like you're just a diamond mine of this whole, you know, chapter in American history. I know what the answer to this question is going to be, but have you had media interest? Obviously mainstream, not so much mainstream left of center, but what about the rest of the media?
Yeah, the other media have been interested, left and right. You know, there are honest people out there left in the media, like you guys, who are still asking inconvenient questions like you're supposed to do. And so those people are still interested. It is my prayer that Americans will wake up and realize, regardless of where you are on the ideological spectrum, you better listen to a bunch of different sources, because if you're only getting your information from the networks and the big newspapers, then, you know, you're walking in the dark.
It's interesting when we talk about these huge issues and all that, this malfeasance. I think the average listener always thinks, well, geez, you know, what can I do? I mean, I'm just sitting here. What can I do? What can they do? Do you have any ideas on that?
Yeah, several people have reached out to me about blogging and, you know, starting their own blog, and I've encouraged them to do it. I mean, I was just some, you know, nut lawyer in Texas who decided to start a blog about local corruption there that I was dealing with, and lo and behold, it just blossomed into something much bigger. It's not brain surgery, what I'm doing. Filing a FOIA request, it takes a little practice, but you don't have to be a lawyer. to request records.
Right.
You know, and there are groups out there like Judicial Watch, you know, that do this for a living.
Yes, they do.
But they can't cover all the bases.
You've got something else. You stay calm and you're fearless. You're not keying into the intimidation and the threats and everything. That's what most people need to understand, that you can transcend the fear, because they want to keep us all in fear.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I tell my friends, hey, look, they can't kill us all. You know, I mean, if there are enough of us out there asking pesky questions, you know, they can't wipe out all of us. And I don't think we've reached that stage in our history. I certainly hope not, where, you know, they're going to start trying to wipe out journalists. But average citizens can start asking these questions. You know, they can join message boards to get this stuff out. And, you know, of course, the obvious, the number one is get out and vote, you know.
But for who?
Well, that's a good point. And we do need, we need people from the outside to start. People who have never been in politics, you know, or people who are just disgusted, you know.
Yeah.
Left, right, Democrat, Republican, whatever, you know. This, so much of this stuff is not ideological. I mean,
no, it's not.
You can't frame people. You don't lie about people.
It's about the rule of law.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But it cannot be denied that the left of center liberal media has pushed the Russiagate narrative with total
let's not get into left or right, because I think it's true. It's not left or right. Look what Fox is doing right now. Okay, so
it is left or right in the sense that the Democratic. This is about an enormous scandal within the Democratic Party. Everything we're talking about happens at the DNC.
Well, what we're talking about, though, I thought you were talking about the press. I said the press, left and right, is not digging into
this. They're asleep at the wheel. Yeah, they're totally asleep.
They're not asleep. They know when not to go there.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's what's going on with that, so...
So in terms of the timeline, are the lawsuits simultaneous? Is one of them at the front of the tarmac? Is like, what's the next thing that might happen vis-a-vis the lawsuits? Because we'd like to keep reporting about this. And
So Folk and Flick will probably be the first to go forward. Steve Biss is the lead attorney on that. Steve is more the expert on defamation, so I'm riding back up to him on that case. But I think that one will probably go to trial first. I think NPR and Folk and Flick will try to settle that case. I just don't know if Ed's going to let them settle that case.
Right.
He wants this stuff. I mean, at the very least, he wants to go through discovery and get this information out and force some of these people to admit just exactly what they
did. And how can bloggers and reporters follow this, report on this in real time as it's progressing?
That's a great question. At present, with as many bloggers and guys like you that we have out there, you can't keep up with all of it. So there's always an opportunity for more people to get involved in real time this stuff, particularly, for example, in these cases, which are in little old Sherman, Texas, which I don't know if Sherman has 30,000 people. It's a relatively small town. So we're going to need folks in, you know, Sherman, Texas that can sit in on a trial with a laptop, you know, and live blog some of this
stuff. Good,
so
yeah.
There are always opportunities out there for this kind of stuff.
Well, and people can go to your blog. It's called LawFlog.
LawFlog.
Because some people need a good
LAWFLOG.
What is it? What's your?
Yeah, it's LawFlog. LAWFLOG.com. And then the motto is, because some people need a good flogging.
True words never spoken.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ty.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure having you.
I hope you'll come back.
Thanks.